When I was in Singapore this month, I sought out one of Australia's newer ventures, the latest of the so-called landing pads. Now, this is basically a government-backed operational base for Australian startups to find their feet. It's where young entrepreneurs get access to Austrade's extensive global network of contacts and business development assistance to speed up the development of an idea or a product in a different and bigger arena than Australia. There are five of these landing pads around the world, and I caught up with some of the brains behind this latest version. I've arrived at Raja Crescent in Singapore, which is the home of this place called the Landing Pad Bash, which is Singapore has been added to the list of landing pads that the Australian government is supporting. The others are in Tel Aviv, Berlin, San Francisco and Shanghai. And the idea is that it provide budding entrepreneurs in Australia with access to some of the most modern and dynamic economies that are really prioritising startups, with the hope that they then come back to Australia and give us the benefit of their knowledge. So let's go in and meet. There have been four who've gone through already, four Australian startups, and four are just about to start. So we're going to go and meet the manager, Joseph Ziegler. So here we are, welcome to Bash. So it's got that typical feel of startups, you know, it's all very sort of open and light wood and lots of sort of poster things on the wall, people sitting around in open chairs, there's a billiard table I can see. It's all very informal, but clearly a lot is going on. Looks playful. It's obviously anything but. So let me introduce you to Joseph Ziegler, who's the manager of this centre. So, Joe, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're just going to have to start from the beginning, I think, and explain to listeners what this is.
Please. The landing pad.
Yes.
So the landing pad is a place that Australian startups can come when they're ready to grow into Asia, or grow into mostly Southeast Asia.
Right.
We're looking for startups that maybe they've gone through an exhausted growth so far in the Australian system, and they can come up here to expand and to grow and to find new business, either in the ASEAN region or even the domestic market. So we get a bit later stage startups. So people who've gone through accelerator programs, people who've already gotten an investment. We have startups that are
running. Are they making money yet?
We have startups who are profitable. We have some startups that are looking for quite large raises for funding. Mm-hmm. We have startups that are expanding now into, they're looking to expand to Malaysia, into Vietnam.
And why Singapore?
For a startup, you've got just a massive market right here. It's not, it would be naive to say that it's a homogeneous market. It's very, very diverse. You've got all kinds of different forms of government, and you've got different types of ethnic backgrounds and tastes. But then in Singapore, we've got so many of the multinationals have their Asia headquarters here. And even we find that a lot of the big companies in Australia report to somebody who might be the decision maker in Singapore. And you get that step closer.
So let's meet, say, someone now, Joe, who yep. is going through your next group. And they've got 90 days here, haven't they?
They have 90 days here. We're starting off in just a couple of weeks.
Right.
So I'm going to introduce Nick from CEC Systems.
Come in, Nick.
Nick's got a really
Hello.
Interesting story.
Nice to meet you. So do sit down, swap seats. So,
thank
Nick,
you.
Tell us about your startup, if you wouldn't mind.
CEC Systems is my company.
Right.
We do industrial technology for shipping and logistics.
And you have come here, why?
So Singapore has always been known as a global hub for shipping. In recent years, the Singapore government has really reinvested and refocused on trying to improve its standing and importance within the industry in relation to shipping. Essentially, for what we do as a company, this is where all the decision makers are.
So what are you aiming to do?
So what our core product is at the moment is collapsible shipping containers. So we've designed and engineered 40-foot shipping container that actually collapses to a quarter of its width and then interlocks, so you can now store, transport and handle four empty containers in the space of one. And from an industry point of view, that specific problem is actually a $16 billion a year loss for the shipping industry.
And this all came out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's an extraordinary link. Tell me.
So I'm former full-time Australian Army, still stayed in the reserves today. But my speciality was strategic joint logistics. specializing in international movements. And on my first tour of Afghanistan, one of the biggest problems we had was resupply. At the time, it was the changeover between General McChrystal and General Petraeus, and that was a huge strategy shift in the war. And at the time when General Petraeus took over, he went on a basis of establishing lots of small operating bases around the country to deny enemy freedom of movement. And as a result of that, resupply became the really hard issue. So we'd always have to run road convoys out to all these little operating bases, and obviously people's lives at risk. And you'd get to a point where the shipping containers was how most of the goods were transported into these bases, surrounded obviously by protection. And then they would literally dump the containers and then drive back out of the bases to give the enemy very little time to realize that they're out there. But what would happen is the same problem from an industry point of view. The containers would just start piling up and piling up and piling up. And eventually you'd have to get rid of them. So you would be at some point sending people out to pick up empty containers. Not for the sake of essentially, you know, a desire to, but really just to get them out because there was not enough space at these bases. So I sort of started thinking about it and said, there's got to be a better solution to this problem. And it wasn't until I did my master's degree that I really looked at that as an international problem of how badly does this problem affect the global supply chain. And that's when I really worked out from a shipping perspective, it's a real killer for the industry, because given the market rates and the issues around currency and the overcapacity and, you know, recent collapses of big shipping lines, their operating costs are so high at the moment and their profits are so low, problems like this are really a
so
big issue.
Where you can people, they deliver in these big containers and then they'd leave them often. They'd leave them.
No, it essentially comes down to trade imbalance. So you have, currently in the world, there's about 38 million odd containers, of which the 40-foot variant that we focused on makes up about 61% or so. And it's become now the global standard across the world of how goods move. But it all comes back to the trade imbalance side, where you have countries that are importing far more than they're exporting and exporting far more than they're importing. So a really good example is China or Australia, where China obviously exports a lot of containers, but then they hit Australia, our export capacity is only so much. So we end up having a regional accumulation of containers at one end. And when you look at that, it costs the same amount of money to store, handle, and move a container, regardless of whether it's full or it's empty. And what happens is, essentially, to meet the demand back in China, eventually a lot of the shipping lines will actually have to send entire vessels up north again.
Which are full of empty containers.
Full of empty containers.
So what is your startup? How does it rectify that?
So essentially, because the core product is a collapsible shipping container, it allows you to actually collapse and interlock four empties in the space of one. So whilst you're never going to get rid of this problem, if you can turn or reduce the impact of that problem by up to 75%, when we're talking in the billions of range, it's billions of dollars of savings across the world.
And being here means what for you? What access does it give you that you mightn't have had in Australia?
Well, essentially, whilst the shipping lines are owned internationally between, you know, Europe and China and across Asia, a lot of the decision makers for particularly purchasing and operations are here in Singapore. So for us as an Australian company, we have to be in a location where the decision makers are. For us, there's the element from the industry side, and then there's also the support from a country who's so focused on the shipping industry, and so their desire to actually support what we're doing has been incredible so far. So for us, Singapore is very strategic.
So do you think by being here and saying having this opportunity of the 90 days, you will get access to, I'm sort of curious now, money is it? Or is it a new bunch of decision makers? Or is it different government help or what?
So from being here, it's actually twofold. One, the Austrade team as a total group have been fantastic here in establishing our relationships with a lot of the government and technology side of the industry here. A great example of the Austrade support has been, they've connected us in with a group called Simtech, who belong to ASTAR, which is essentially the Singapore government's version of CSIRO here. Simtech, because of the government focus on the shipping industry, has already agreed to provide a lot of support from an engineering and operational perspective as we go through and do product and operational upgrades to the product over the next 6 to 12 months. So that is an example of some of the things that the landing pad has been helpful for. On the other side, the landing pad has been really helpful going forward and actually helping us transition across to Singapore. So instead of taking a leap in the dark and hoping that we're doing the right thing or setting up in the right way or meeting the right agencies, having the support of the landing pad and Austrade is essentially sort of taking some of that risk and some of that uncertainty out of the process, so that when we are here, we're actually good to go from day one and you know, progressively build versus that shot in the dark.
God, it's a long way from the army, isn't it?
a little bit. I have to say it's
terrifying and exciting all at once.
Well, it's a nicer spot in Singapore than some of the places I've been.
Well, look, the very best of luck, Nicholas.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, so now Dr. Dan's going to come in here and sit down. And Dan Hunter is going to take us through the experience of someone who's been through it. So you've just finished your 90 days,
yep.
Have you, Dan?
Absolutely.
So tell us about what happened, please.
Oh, got a range of things. So the main thing is that we got access to the network of all of the people here. You sort of think when you come in, oh, you know, the incubator is a place, but it's really about the network and about the people. So Austrade have been really fantastic at connecting us with a range of different experiences.
And tell us about your startup, if you would, please.
Oh, it's called Quitch, and it's a mobile learning platform. We push out video to students' phones, ask them questions. We allow teachers to do all sorts of things with it. It gives the feedback to the teachers about how the students are doing, and it gamifies it for the students so that the students actually get motivated and
gamifies
do stuff.
Gamifies it?
Yeah, it turns
so
it into
a game.
So
this is the curriculum, gamified?
Yeah, gamified, right, exactly. Well, it's an ugly word, right?
It is an ugly
word. Terrible word.
We'll invent
but
it, though.
It's not, it's good. It's the only thing that we've got these days, right? So, basically the idea is that you use games to actually motivate people to do stuff, and in this case, it's motivating students to actually learn. And so we think that's a good thing. They don't even realise they're learning. They think they're playing games.
And what had you already begun in Australia, and how does coming here improve that?
The main thing, so we're, you know, we're a digital platform, so you sort of think, oh, you can just push it out. It doesn't really matter where you are. It can be anywhere in the world. So we had a lot of take-up from universities and from some high schools around the world. So we had about 100, 105 universities
around
the world.
So you initially started in a university setting?
Yeah. So it's a spin-off out of Swinburne Uni. So we spun it off out of there and sort of sent it around the world, and you can do that really easily just through the normal, you know, internet contacts and that. But coming here really made a big difference just in terms of actually seeing on the ground our first kind of major market outside of Australia.
So the ASEAN market.
Exactly. And well, in our case, so if you think about it, you know, we're talking about learning. And in Australia, we assume that every kid's got a laptop. But of course, in Asia, most kids don't have a laptop. They don't have a PC, but everyone's got a smartphone. So this was sort of a really great base of operations for us to start thinking about, okay, how do you do instruction? How do you do learning entirely on a phone because you don't have a computer for the students to go back and do?
Now, had you already started to think about that in Australia, like in terms of just the sort of sheer brain power?
Yeah, of course we realised that. But you know, you start off with, you know, as it's coming out of a university, you sort of expect every student to have a computer. And we sort of knew that that wasn't the case in other places. But when we sort of started thinking about our markets, we sort of thought, oh, well, it's you know, wherever the sort of established ed tech markets are, and that's sort of Europe and America and Australia. Coming to Singapore really kind of focused us on the idea of actually, no, probably the biggest market for us going forward will probably be in Asia.
And who suggested that to you, or was that you?
We were aware of it. Mostly it was sort of the opportunity came up, and one of the really weird things about being in a startup is you grab every opportunity you can. And so Austrade announces this thing, you know, it's the inaugural Singapore one, and so you go, okay, great, it's got to be the case that there'll be a lot of people who will get in the second round who, you know, just don't have time to get in the first round, so we'd better get in the first round.
So you applied?
We applied, and they were foolish enough to take us, and we had a great time.
Does it mean a totally different capital experience? Can you get money here?
I've had a lot of discussions around that question. The short answer is almost certainly yes. There's a lot more money here than there is in Australia. There's a different entrepreneurial environment here.
What does that mean?
It means that Singaporeans are not as innovative as the Singaporean government would like. Because culturally, it's a really interesting place where it's quite conservative, right? Parents get worried for their children. They encourage them to do certain things, which means that they skew towards the stuff that I do in my day job as a law professor. They want to be lawyers, and they don't really want to be entrepreneurs. And so I think one of the things that, as an outsider sort of talking about this, I think one of the things the Singaporean government wants to try to encourage is a much more entrepreneurial mindset.
To step outside your comfort zone.
Yeah, and that's true in Australia as well. I mean, there's a whole, you know, national innovation agenda around that. But here, I think that there's a lot of money, and there's sort of a sense of, okay, well, we need to find innovative and interesting entrepreneurial opportunities to invest that money in, and there are more here.
Do you think that you will stay here now? What's it going to mean for your life?
No, I have kids in Melbourne, God damn them. So I can't. I can't, but for the moment. We'll be Australian-based, you know, in keeping with the Austrade mission. Right? We want to be Australian-based. based. But I do think that there are sort of opportunities to expand here that we're only now just starting to come to grips with. You can't sort of do everything in 3 months, and it's a nice starting point.
It sounds like you've travelled a long way in your head, let alone in other areas, in the last 3 years.
Definitely. I mean, we 3 years or 3 months, right? It's felt like 3 years here.
Overall. This was only the icing on the cake.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, we've only been in business a year, but we sort of had the prototype before that. Yeah, yeah, about that. I think our company was formed less than a year ago.
Do you employ anybody?
One person full time and about 8 people part time. So we'll have to do another capital raise to make sure that they still have jobs, but we'll get there in the end.
But I mean, I suppose the intriguing thing I think for people to listen and understand is, do we expect industries to emerge from this? Do we expect sort of new BHPs to emerge? What scale are you thinking of?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, like all entrepreneurs, right, that's world domination.
Be realistic.
No, I won't. You can't be realistic, an entrepreneur. It's like world domination is the only thing that you wake up to in the morning and you go to sleep in at night. So our entire industry is going to develop out of this? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any question. I mean, each of the people who've been here have different aspirations, and sort of like the upside is going to be different. I don't think there's any question that the whole sort of digital learning space, which is where we're in, there's enormous opportunities, whether that is an enormous industry or enormous market for Australian companies. I mean, who knows? We'll see.
Well, good luck. I hope to see you up in lights.
Thank you very
taking
much.
Taking over the world.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
No problem.
And if Dan and Nick represent the tenure of those going through these Australian landing pads around the world, we're sitting rather pretty, I think, in the startup world. That was Dan Hunter, founder of Quitch and founding dean of the law school at Swinburne University of Technology, Nicholas Press, Managing Director and CEO of CEE Systems, and Joseph Ziegler, who manages that landing pad in Singapore.